This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
How many people in here would consider themselves, or have ever heard of the term, foodie before? How many foodies do we have in here? Okay, all two people. And someone just said what? So what a foodie is a person that loves food. I mean, they always talk about food. Now, how many foodies do we have in the house? Wow, like 80%. Which is really weird because I would think that no one would be in this service that would be eating, right? Because everyone would be coming to the last service. In any case, 80%, wow, that's amazing. See, the foodie is these types of people that always bring the conversation back to food. It doesn't matter what the conversation is. You could be talking about politics, goes back to food. They talk about the latest tantalizing steak that they just ate or the sugary treat that they just gnawed on. I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone like that. Except this guy. Did you guys see these few pictures? This was all yesterday. These are pictures. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was. No, it wasn't a picture of all of yesterday, but we love food. I think most of us would say we love food. And interesting enough, a couple weeks ago, my wife and I, we went out to eat, out to dinner, and it was Mother's Day, so she wanted to go. I said, babe, where do you want to go? I mean, anywhere you want to go. Let's celebrate you. Now you're giving birth again, so let's, you know, you got a lot going on, so let's just focus on you today. So we go out to eat, and we go to this restaurant she's been wanting to go, and so we pull up, and we show up, and, you know, honestly, it should have been the first indication when no one was there that, in any case, so we look at the food, we look at the menu, and we decide what dish we're going to get, and so we order this, you know, a couple appetizers, and we get a dish, and the dish comes out, and take a first bite, and to be honest with you, I'm a pretty easy person. I could pretty much eat anything except broccoli and cauliflower. Everything else is fair game. And I took that first bite, and I'm like, took another bite, and to be honest with you, it tasted horrible. It tasted horrible. I mean, it tasted, to try to give a metaphor, it tasted like eating Alpo on shoe leather. Not that I've ever tried that, but if I ever did. So invariably, we did not take it home. It just wasn't that great. But how many of you went to a restaurant, you went to a place and your expectations were really high? They bring out the food and the presentation is nice and, you know, the smell is great. I mean, the ingredient looks and tastes maybe just right. And all of a sudden, maybe you keep eating it and you're all of a sudden realizing this doesn't taste that great. But it looks great, the temperature's great, the presentation is great, and all of a sudden your expectations are just dashed because, man, I thought this place was great, I thought this food was going to be great, and it just didn't taste that great. See, the truth is, flavor matters. Everyone say, flavor matters. Yeah, flavor does matter. I think the same is true in how our lives intersect with other lives. And the people around us, the people we influence. The flavor matters. To explain that, I go back to something Scott had talked about last week. It's from a scripture that Jesus kind of talked about this notion of flavor. And he says in Matthew chapter 5, he says these words. Now keep in mind, when Jesus says these words, he's talking to his followers, his disciples, those that follow after Jesus. And this is what he says to them. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? I mean, think about this. Salt is such a vital ingredient in many dishes today that if it wasn't in some dishes, it would just taste bland. It wouldn't taste that good. And Jesus catches on to this and he says, guys, listen, you are the salt of the earth. That's right, you are. You are the salt of the earth. And we'll talk about that more, but what a profound statement that Jesus makes to them. You are the salt of the earth. Now, when you walked in this morning, you noticed that you had these salt packets on your chair there. And maybe you're visiting with us. We'll be talking about it in a few moments. But maybe you're visiting with us and you're thinking to yourself, is this an Orchard Valley thing? I mean, what's the deal with the salt packets? Do you guys have like condiments each week sitting on the chairs? Yes, next week is ketchup. And so week after that, bring your own. No, but it's interesting. Does anyone know the number one use of salt or why it's produced in the United States? The number one use, I was reading this the other day, the number one use of salt in the United States. 51% of salt that is produced in the United States is used to de-ice the roads. 51%. But that was not true for Jesus. When he came to the earth, he did not come to a place where roads were covered with ice and snow, because he knew this was not God's will for anyone to live in such a place. This is a ridiculous place to live, and yet we find ourselves in Illinois. But I digress. Only 8% of salt that is produced in the United States is used for table salt. 8%. In fact, some of you that came in this morning, maybe you saw it on the chair and you kind of have some health problems, and you looked at that and said, you know, I can't get near that because I'm on a low sodium, you know, salt substitute type diet. But see, in the ancient world, it was a different story. People discovered that there was something about salt that was a preservative, that it would fight decay and corruption. In fact, back in Jesus' day, they used salt. They could preserve food during times of famine that would contribute to an outcome of either life or death. They began to discover that the salt was used as a purifying agent, that it would dissolve bacteria and destroy bacteria. It's also discovered that people love salt on certain dishes because it tastes so good on certain parts of the taste buds. See, most of the ancient cities in Italy during Jesus' day, it's interesting in history. History would suggest to us that in the ancient cities, especially in Italy, in Rome, they would pay their soldiers in salt. Actually, the word salt comes from the Latin word sal, which means salary. They would pay some of their soldiers in salt. Where we get the term he or she is worth their weight in salt, which has been morphed over the years into he or she is worth their weight in gold. Same idea. Was amazing when Jesus says this during that time. I mean, empires were built around this. This was a very important commodity. So when Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth, it's a profound statement to them. I mean, people went to war over these things. I mean, can you imagine going to war with your next door neighbor over the salt shaker? It is said that actually when in those days when one country would attack another country, they were being assaulted. No, just kidding. They did not do that. Some of you guys are like, writing it down. That's interesting. So you have to understand that when Jesus is saying this, unless you understand who he's talking to and why he says what he says, that it's a prized currency. That when Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth, he is saying to them in gist that, guys, listen, you are God's plan to fight decay and corruption and bring life and zest. You are it. But see, if we have a connection with those around us, those in our neighborhood, those in our home, those in our workplace, if we have a bland connection with those around us and we're not salty, then maybe they're going to be disconnected from God. I don't know about you, but when I go to an authentic Italian restaurant, one of the dishes I like to order is a caprese salad. And what I love about this is, you know, it's got that nice slice of tomato and then that nice slice of buffalo mozzarella and then that kind of basil leaf on top with a little drizzle of olive oil. We're just going to quit now and go and eat. That's what... No, but I love it. It tastes so good. But I think what's even more powerful when you eat this is that little ingredient that makes it pop, and it is salt. I don't know if you've ever had a caprese salad without salt, but it doesn't taste as good as it could be. See, salt is such an important commodity. It's such an important part of what Jesus is talking about in those days. And in ancient times, when Jesus says that to his followers, he says, hey guys, you are the salt of the earth. You need to bring flavor to those around you. You need to be a part of bringing God to a bland world at times, a hurting world at times. You are God's solution. You are there to be present for God to work through in your everyday life. And so what does that look like? I mean, what does that look like, you know, at the workplace, in the marketplace? What does that look like as I sit in cubicle land? What does that look like in my neighborhood? What does that look like as I interact with my neighbors and I interact with my spouse that maybe not a follower of Jesus, or my kids that don't follow Jesus? It's a great question. What does that look like? But we understand this. Jesus is so clear and he's so brilliant, and he says a simple statement, guys, you are the salt of the earth. I mean, what a staggering statement that Jesus makes. That this is something, it's kind of a sobering thought, because there's some implications here that if we really think about it, salt does not exist for its own sake. That's right, salt does not exist for its own sake. Salt's calling is to lose itself in something bigger than itself. Its destiny is fulfilled, if you will, when the packet is opened and it gets to be utilized in certain dishes. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. And so when Jesus makes this statement, he says, listen guys, I want you to understand that you can contribute. By me working through you, you can contribute to me touching the lives and the individuals around you. Just a side note for a moment, you want to write this down, just a kind of a interesting thought here. But when Jesus says to these followers, these disciples, he says, you are the salt of the earth. When Jesus makes that statement, he's not giving a command here. He's not saying, go and be salt. He is making an observation. You are the salt of the earth. And these are contrasting points here. He's not giving a command. He's making an observation. Guys, listen, when you get a hold, here he is, he's saying, listen, when you understand that any time that someone is so immersed in Christ and his presence and understand his goodness and his mercy, any time someone begins to get free from the threats and the rewards that would enslave you to the society and this culture, in some ways you begin to get salty. In some ways you begin to understand what Jesus is saying. And so when Jesus makes the statement that you are the salt of the earth, Jesus isn't just making the statement that, well, that's good, Jesus. That's great. I'm glad you said that. But what does that look like? I mean, how does that look in my everyday life? And so what we want to do for the next few minutes is really tackle that. What does that look like? I mean, how does God work in our everyday life? What are some simple things that we can do, or we are doing, in connecting with those who don't know Jesus? Connecting with those around us and influencing those around us toward his goodness and his mercy and toward his grace. I remember a few years ago, we were living in this neighborhood. Actually, we're still living in the neighborhood. And I remember there was this gentleman who had been inviting us for a few months to his annual, you know, summer, you know, block party. And I remember saying, you know, we're going to come, Catherine and I, we're going to be there. And so the time was coming up during that weekend, we were supposed to be going, and it was that weekend I was going to be teaching. And it was during that time that we didn't have a Saturday service, so it was going to be that Saturday night. And so usually is the time I get ready to teach, or in the same case with Scott. And so I'm going to prep and get ready to teach. And coincidentally, I'm teaching on how do we influence our culture? How do we get into the mix of our neighborhoods? How do we get in the mix of our job? And what does saltiness look like? I mean, I remember this is a few years ago. What does that look like? And so I'm preparing to teach a message on this idea. And so I tell him, I can't come, I've got to prepare. My wife says to me, she says, Ted, I don't understand. How can you not go to this party? How can you not go to this great opportunity to connect with our neighbors? How can you not go to this and you're going to go to church and talk about how to influence your neighborhood? Help me understand this. Why would you, Ted, why would you go and stay inside and prepare for a message like this and not connect with your neighbors? I was like, that's the dumbest question I've ever heard. No, I didn't say that. I said, ouch. So invariably, I did end up going, and it was awesome. We had a great time, and we ended up leaving probably around the time, it was like 2 in the morning or something, when they started singing 99 bottles of beer in the wall. I don't know, it was... In any case, it's a great learning experience because a few weeks later, through a series of discussions throughout that next few weeks, I remember the gentleman that had invited us over came to our house, knocked on the door, it was fairly late after work, and he's kind of teary-eyed, and I'm like, okay, hey man, what's going on? And he says, hey, can I come in and talk to you? My wife's going to be over in a few minutes. I was like, sure. So we started talking about some other things, and he just said to me, he says, you know, he says, I have to tell you, he said, my wife and I have been talking, and we've been observing you guys for the last 2 years. We've just been watching you. And I'm thinking, well, that's awkward. Stalker! we've been watching you for the last 2 years, and you know what? You guys are the type of people we want our kids to be like. Yeah, wow, it's true. It was just like a sobering moment because even then you're thinking, what did I say these last few years? Did I yell at my wife? I never yell at my wife, no. And I remember sitting, you know, standing there and just being really humbled by the experience. And he said, you know, I want our kids to be like you. He says, you know, I've been around I have some friends that are followers of Christ as you are. And he says, they're always, you know, seem like they have this perfect life and nothing ever goes wrong and everything is, you know, kind of spiritual jargon all the time and Jesus talk and this and that. And he says, they never learn to connect with us. He says, but you guys are different. And so we had a great discussion. And long story short, he became a follower of Christ and ended up, was a part of this church community and invariably took another job and moved away. But I think of those moments like that, that I think sometimes that we missed being the salt of the earth because we're so consumed even with good things like coming to church. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. And so for the next few minutes, I want to kind of touch on some things I've been learning the last few years. And the first thing I've been learning is this. And I think it's very important, very simple, is this, that we need to be aware. Everyone say aware. We need to be aware that God is already at work, that God is already at work, that God is already present, that God is working on people's hearts. I mean, think about this, you know, Scott and Mike, they're in Africa right now, and it's not as though that they're in Africa and they brought God with them, although God is with them. It's not as though they went together, you know, wearing matching fanny packs that's labeled God. No, although that would be a great picture, wouldn't it? That would be... No, they went over there and God is there. In fact, the psalmist said this, as he writes, he said, God, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? He says, if I go to the depths of the earth, you're there. If I go to the heavens, you are there. See, even creation sings of God. I love this, what the psalmist said. It's so profound. He says this. He says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Wow. Even the sky has a language in and of itself describing the goodness of God. In fact, to take this thought further, a few years ago, I found this writing by this high school student at the time. It's a girl in high school that wrote couple of paragraphs just describing creation, describing the goodness of God, how God sings all around us that he's present. Listen to what she says. She says, I've been asked by some how I can be so certain in the existence of God, and I have asked them in return if they have eyes to see. God has woven himself irretrievably into nature, left his fingerprints behind to show us where he's been. His signature is smeared in the curls of the Milky Way, forever circling above the rim of the world. God has scattered fragments of himself above the earth, like a father hides eggs in the yard before his son's very first Easter. Hiding behind a tree with laughing eyes, just to see in those moments the treasures they will uncover first. She goes on to write, she says, God is crying out all around us. He is present in the breathless silence of the snow-smothered mountains. He is dancing with the sunlight that shatters on the ocean's waves. He is hiding in the decaying moss and crumbling shale and the old forgotten places in the world. No jagged mountain throws its sharp weight against the sky that is not a testament to his goodness. The entire sum of creation, each private and individual act of nature, is simply God waving hello. Creation speaks that God lives, God cares, God is at work. In fact, one time, the Apostle Paul, he's on Mars Hill in the book of Acts, and he's debating and he's talking to individuals that are, you know, somewhat of intellects, and here's some individuals who are worshiping the sun and are worshiping the moon, and they're worshiping all these different gods. And Paul comes along and he says, hey guys, listen, God is all around you. He says, but the person you seek is Jesus. The person you seek is Jesus. Here's Paul being an example of salt and describing, said, God, guys, Jesus is here. See, sometimes I think, you know, we think to ourselves as followers of Jesus, whether we are newer followers of Jesus or we've been for a long time, that, you know, if I just had a different boss, if I just had a different spouse, if I just had different kids, if I just had different neighbors, then I can influence them. If they believed in Jesus, then I would be able to be salt. That kind of defeats the purpose. See, this idea that we're salt only when, you know, things are going well. You know, sometimes being salt is in those uncomfortable moments, sometimes in those boring and mundane moments. Because the truth of the matter is that being salty, as we discover, is maybe adding to what God is doing already. As we discover that we're a part of people's journey, we're a part of getting them involved in understanding his goodness and his mercy and his grace. See, it's our job to reinforce grace, to reinforce love and forgiveness. It is not our job to reinforce being right. It is not your job to reinforce judging the people around you. That's not your job. Or condemning the people around you. A pastor that I like to listen to on iTunes, he's out of LA, and a few weeks ago, he had an opportunity to go on a very well-known LA talk show on the radio. And so he's on there, and it's live, and there's quite a few people, thousands of people listening to this, and of course, the gentleman that is talking with him, that's the host, is not a follower of Jesus. It would be considered an atheist, if you will. And he kind of, right at the front of the show, says to him, says, hey, listen, seriously. Says to the pastor, he says, seriously, are you one of those followers of Christ that condemns people that, you know, to hell if they don't believe like you? And he said it was like an awkward moment, you know. And he says to him, you know, Jesus said these words. Jesus said, I have not come to condemn the world. Someone asked Jesus, says, are you come to condemn the world and judge the world? Jesus said, I haven't come to condemn the world. I haven't come to judge the world. I've come to bring life. So we said, now, if Jesus wasn't willing to condemn the world and Jesus wasn't willing to judge the world, I'm not going to begin to do what Jesus wasn't willing to do. I'm here to talk about life. See, it's not our job to judge people and to be right. If you feel like you have to be right, then maybe you're insecure. Makes you feel good, huh? I love it. Say it again, Ted. No. But we got to understand that God is at work. Number two, we have to understand, and I think this is very important, that we may be a part of someone's spiritual journey. You know, we talk about every week that we're here to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ, to help them take that next step on their spiritual journey. You may be just a part of that journey. You may be able to encourage someone, maybe there to listen to someone that may be, you know, struggling with something in their life, anxiety, depression, maybe something very simple. I don't know. See, the Apostle Paul, he bought into this idea, and he said to the church at Corinth, he said, listen, after all, who is Apollos? Who is Paul? We are only God's servants through whom you believed the good news. Each of us did the work the Lord gave us. I planted the seed in your hearts, and Apollos watered, but it was God who made it grow. See, Paul was trying to distinguish, hey guys, listen, there may be times that I've helped to plant the seed in someone's heart, and I've talked about the good news, I've talked about the gospel, I've talked about God's grace, I was able to be salt in this moment, but then someone came along like Apollos and said, you know what, let's talk about that more. I want to encourage you on your spiritual journey. And so maybe we're just a part of someone's spiritual journey and them growing in a relationship with Jesus Christ. I remember not too long ago having a conversation with a friend of mine who considers himself an atheist, not a believer in Jesus. And he knows the scripture very, very well. More than most Christians do, actually. And so one day we had this discussion, and to be truthful, I'm not a big debater. I'm not going to sit and debate with you and argue with you, but let's have a discussion. Let's talk about it. Let's have a respectful discussion. So we're sitting there, and he's getting actually pretty heated about a situation. He says, okay, listen, Ted, let's just be honest. If Jesus, as you claim, is really God, then and he lived a perfect life and so on and so forth, he said, let's talk about a scripture for a moment. He says, you know, Ted, you know, in John 8, it talks about Jesus having an interaction with a lady who's caught in the midst of adultery. Religious leaders brought this lady before Jesus, and they try to entrap Jesus, and says, you know, the law says stoner, and so Jesus, what do you say? Jesus, you know, writes on the ground, does some different things, and then he says, you know, those of you here that are here essentially accusing this lady, those of you that are here accusing her, those of you that have no sin, basically cast the first stone. It says that all of them left except Jesus and the lady on the ground there, and Jesus says to her, hey, listen, where's your accusers? Jesus says, you know, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more. I don't accuse you, I forgive you. He says, my friend says to him, he says, yeah. He says, so, I have a problem with that. So what's your problem? He says, well, I have a problem. If Jesus is perfect and Jesus is God, then why? Why didn't Jesus throw the stone? Because if he's really God, and he said he without sin throw the first stone, why didn't he throw the stone? I said, that's what's so brilliant about the story. He could have, but he didn't. See, in that moment, that lady needed grace. In that moment, she didn't need to be judged and looked down upon. See, God's grace and God's forgiveness rings louder and is louder than your own failures and your own shortcomings. And we had some great discussion. He goes, that's something to think about. So we talked about some other things, but I was reminded of something that Jude said in the New Testament. It says, you know what? Have mercy on those who doubt. See, if we're taking the position of being right and judging other people and correcting everyone's doctrine around us or those that don't follow Jesus, then we're not being the salt of the earth. Sometimes it's just showing people the goodness and grace of God. I love what a pastor by the name of Rob Bell says. He says, if the gospel isn't good news for everybody, then it isn't good news for anybody. See, the gospel must be good news, which puts parameters around what we can talk about. So we need to be aware that, number one, that God is at work. Number two, we need to be aware that maybe we're a part of someone's journey. And number three, I think this is very important, is that we need to be aware that maybe God has you right where he wants you to be. Maybe at your workplace, maybe in that neighborhood, maybe with those friends and those neighbors or what have you, maybe God has you where he wants you. So I think awareness is so huge that we have to be aware that God is at work in our life before we get there. God is present. Number two, we got to understand that God, in everyday interactions with people, that maybe we're a part of their spiritual journey. Maybe we're not taking from A to Z. Maybe we're just, as Paul says, I'm just there to sow the seed in the heart. Or maybe we need to think about, we need to be aware of the fact that maybe God has us where he needs us. The second thing that I think is extremely important when we live out this notion of being the salt of the earth is, number two, is that we need to live authentically. Everyone say authentic. Say it with some passion, authentic. Should we start talking about food again? Caprese salad, No. Be authentic. I think this is such a huge part as followers of Jesus, is living out authenticity. I mean, how many of us know people in our lives that are followers of Christ that aren't real with people? They're very plastic, and it looks like their life is put together perfect, and they're really good at impression management and letting everyone see that maybe their life is more put together than it really is. And so maybe sometimes in authenticity, it's not having all the answers all the time, not being perfect all the time. Inauthenticity is this notion, this idea that, hey, listen, I need to have the answers to the questions that people ask. And sometimes it's okay to say, I don't know. It reminds me of a little boy who went to Sunday school, who knew the sort of answers to give to certain kinds of questions. And so the Sunday school's teacher said to the student, says, you know, what is brown? What is furry? Has a long tail and stores up nuts for winter. Well, the boy muttered, I guess the answer is Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel to me. See, we feel like we've got to glaze it over with spiritual jargon sometimes rather than being authentic in the moment with people. And see, Jesus one time, he's talking to a bunch of Pharisees and he says, listen, woe unto you guys. He says, you clean the outside of your life to look perfect, but inside you are filled with greed and self-indulgence. That's not something you put on a Hallmark card, right? See, here is Jesus saying, listen, you guys need to be authentic. I remember a few weeks ago, I was part of a group project, and there were several people a part of the project. And I remember I just had one of these long days, and I'm finishing up my MBA at a local university. And so we were in this class, and I was just having a hard week, and just one of those moments like, God, please, as I'm walking into class, please don't let anyone say something stupid because I think I'm going to snap. You know, just one of those moments. Some of you looking at, don't act like you're more holier than me, all right? You've all had that moment. And so I remember, you know, we get in this group, and sure enough, Mr. Talk-A-Lot stood up, and he stood up and he just started really dictating and saying a lot of things. And to be honest, I said, you know what? I think you need to sit down. I said, you're done. I said some other things. And they weren't being the salt of the earth. They were different flavors. So in that moment, I just felt horrible. And so at the end of the group discussion, I just said, hey guys, you know what, let's just recalibrate for a moment. I have to say, I apologize. That was a wrong way to address this. I've had a rough day, I said, but that's no excuse to say what I said. And then a couple people later, like, well, I wanted to say something, but I'm like, you know what, don't. You, no, but, so you know, I apologize, and it was great. But here's what was really interesting. Is that this individual comes up to me later on and says, you know what? Says, I have to hand it to you. I've been following you on your blog and listened to some of your messages. And I'm like, oh, no. Do you remember my name? It's Scott Hodge. Remember, Scott Hodge. And I said, oh, I am so sorry. I felt so goofy. You know, I was being an egghead there, you know. So I said, I am so sorry. She's like, no. Actually, what you apologizing was huge to me. She says, I've always struggled with this idea of following Christ. And she says, I've tried churches out. And she said, you know, the fact that you would apologize after being a jerk. I'm like, jerk? Do you think jerk? That's kind of, no. She says, is huge. She says, that goes a long way with me. She says, you're for real. You're for real. And I'm like, I know, that's what my wife tells me. No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. I was very humbled. Because once again, I began to see in those authentic moments, those moments where you mess up as a follower of Christ, to hide that fact, I think, is wrong. Sometimes it's okay to say, I screwed up, guys. I'm sorry. It goes a long way. And I've seen it even with some of the teams I lead at work, when I've said, I'm sorry. When I've apologized about something, that I gain a lot of equity with people. But when I just don't allow, you know, don't swallow my pride and just keep moving forward, and when an apology is necessary, I lose equity with people. So sometimes an apology and being authentic as a follower of Jesus and being salt sometimes is necessary. The Apostle Paul says, real quick, he said this, he says, listen guys, he said, the things that I want to do, I don't end up doing, and the things that I don't want to do, I end up doing. Who's going to save me, this wretched man that I am? The Apostle Paul says, it's the Lord Jesus Christ. Paul says, listen, I struggle with this kind of tug of war between doing good and doing, wanting to do bad things, and then doing bad things, and then wanting to do good things, and I go back and forth, and who's going to save me? And he goes back to Jesus. I think it's those moments that we're honest with ourselves and weakness and say, God, it's your grace, forgive me. People that are around me, forgive me, please forgive me for being an egghead, you know? Please forgive me. Another example I would suggest to you, and I think this is an extremely, extremely important one, is I have a friend who's a professor. His IQ is off the charts. And he's probably twice my age, and he's been struggling for years on this, again, this idea of following Jesus. And he poses some great questions. We've had great discussions about God. And I remember one day he said to me, he asked a lot of questions, just kind of the hot buttons, you know, if there's evil in the world, da-da-da-da, you know, and why does God allow this? And so we had some great discussions, some questions I was able, you know, to give answers to, and some I wasn't. And I remember he asked one question, a couple questions that I just said to him, I turned and I said, you know what, I don't know the answer to it. What do you mean you don't know the answer? Well, I don't. Well, if God is so good, then why does this happen? I said, man, that's a great question. I said, but I still know that he's good. I said, there's questions that I have that I just don't have the answer to, and that's okay. And I kept telling him, hey, keep asking questions. Keep asking questions. I think questions are good. I would say to you guys, listen, you know, sometimes in those vulnerable moments, those moments of saying, I don't have all the answers as a follower of Jesus, it's okay. It doesn't mean you're ineffective. It just means you're honest and being authentic. So a couple things I want you to remember about authenticity. Number one is, admit when you're wrong. It goes a long way. Number two is, you don't have to have all the answers. It's okay to say, I don't know. Everyone say that with me. I don't know. I don't know. Last but not least, number three, as followers of Christ and being the salt of the earth and bringing flavor to the world around us, as many times we just have to be available. We have to be available to the people around us. Again, in our neighborhood, in the marketplace. We have to be available to maybe a spouse that is not a follower of Jesus. Our kids that have questions and they're getting to the age that making that decision to follow Christ is maybe on the balance or what have you. We have to be available, and what that means simply means is that we need to be available to listen, be available to field maybe hard questions, maybe to field those maybe uncomfortable moments. A couple weeks ago, I had a great conversation with a gentleman, and it was actually in another class I was taking, and if anyone knows me very well, I'm more of an introvert, and so quite the opposite of Scott, and so in any case, sometimes I just like to read a crowd. I like to walk into a new situation. My wife's the opposite. She just likes to meet everyone, you know, I'm not a person that just goes into a situation and goes, do you want to know about Jesus? That's just awkward and weird. And if you're like that, shame on you. No. No, because sometimes, especially in our culture, maybe it works in other cultures. In the American culture, in the westernized culture, I think sometimes it turns people off. I think for me, 8 times out of 10, the connections I've had with people is through relationship. In any case, this gentleman sitting next to me that I've built a rapport with through other classes, we're sitting there and we end up hearing about a gentleman that ended up passing away, a guy our age, a student who had passed away in the night a few days before. He ended up dying prematurely. And so we ended up talking about that. A break came up and we ended up talking about that. And I didn't think anything of it. And I was just writing some notes down during break as to what we were talking about in class. And he just had this sobering look on his face and he turns to me and says, Ted, you know, he says, I have to be honest with you. He says, I'm kind of afraid to die. I'm like, oh, is that right? So I was like, well, here's a great opportunity just to have some discussion. I said, well, what do you mean? Tell me about that. So he begins to describe, listen, you know what? I'm afraid to die because I don't know where I'm going to go. But the truth is, I don't know if I really believe in God, and I don't know really if I follow after God, you know, what does that look like? And, you know, I feel like I'm a really good person, and my family thinks so, and I don't do a lot of bad things. I think I'm a good manager. I think I'm a good spouse. And he goes on and on and on and on, and we talk for a while, and finally I just said, you know, so let me ask you. I said, let's talk about this idea of goodness. I said, do you really believe that, you said you're good. Yeah, I volunteer. I do these, you know, goes on and on. And I said, well, how good is good enough? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you said that you don't really know if you believe in God, and he's this great, perfect God up there. And I said, but if God, let's just suppose, do you think that God is the measuring stick of goodness? I said, because how good is good enough? I mean, if God's the measuring stick, then I said, maybe we're all in trouble. I said, so how good do you need to be? I said, well, I don't know. I said, I would suggest to you that, you know, I think we get caught up in this idea. And so we started talking about kind of this notion of Christ and following Jesus. And I said to him, I said, I would sum up this. I said, grace is much more, and I was explaining what grace was and the love of God. I said, grace is much more powerful than anything that you could ever do in life. As good as your good deeds are, they're never going to earn you the right to be made right with God. They're never going to, if God is the measuring stick. And I said to him, I said, and he wrote this thought down, and if you want to write this down, I said, your rightness with God, if it's based on what your good works can attain, I said, it's always going to be do. You're always going to have to do more. I said, rightness through your good works says do. I said, but rightness through the cross and through Jesus, it says done. I said, your relationship with God and you asking some of the questions you're asking, I said, you don't need to be afraid. I said, his grace and his mercy and his love transcends anything that you could ever do. Your prodigality, your failures, your shortcomings are all small matters in comparison to the cross. I said, you can never be good enough because you never will be good enough. I said, but Jesus was good enough for you. So we had some great discussion about the gospel. And that moment that seemed insignificant, that seemed boring, that seemed like uncomfortable, maybe for you, being available looks like, hey, I have a headache today, I don't feel the greatest, but maybe there's people around us that we just need to listen to, encourage, maybe share the goodness and the kindness of God. See, being available means this. We need to be, in being available, we need to engage by maybe talking, listening, helping those around us. It looks like listening in times that maybe you don't want to listen. Maybe the times you've had a bad day. In those small moments, I believe that God is there. And Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. So my challenge for you these next few days is to really think about the environments that God has you in, at your home, in your neighborhood, in the marketplace, wherever you may be. And the challenge for you is to say, God, how can I be salt in the world around me? And so imagine for a moment, just imagine for a moment if we were aware that God is present, that we were aware in those small moments that we're a part of people's spiritual journey. That maybe God has us where he wants us to be. God has us in that workplace that may be hard, in that neighborhood. I mean, imagine with me for a moment if we lived authentic lives where we were okay, where we swallowed our pride and said, you know what, I admit that I was wrong. And we gain equity with people. And we earn the right to talk maybe about Christ and his goodness. And maybe imagine for a moment in living this authentic life, if just for a moment that we were honest with some people and said, look, I don't know the answers to your questions, but hey, I'd love to tackle and wrestle and grapple with some of these things together. And lastly, what if for a moment we were available to engage and to talk and to listen and to help in those small moments, to help maybe a next door neighbor, a widower, whatever it may be, someone that is next door that is struggling with their kids, that they just lost their husband or their wife or whatever it may look like, maybe in those small moments, we gain the equity, we gain the right to speak into someone's life and share the good news. And so what I'd like to challenge you to do, these salt packets right here, I'd like you to just grab these for a moment. What I want to challenge you these next few days is I want you to just hold on to this. And maybe you just say a little prayer, and maybe it's as you leave the parking lot, grab a hold of this and say, God, you said I am the salt of the earth, that you want to flow and work through me. Even with my flaws, despite the fact that I have no title at work or whatever it may be, God, I want to be the salt of the earth. So what I'd like to ask you to do these next few days, at the end of this week maybe, maybe what you do is maybe early in the morning when you're eating, maybe if you eat eggs, maybe open up this salt packet and just pour it over the eggs, if you're an eggs type person. Or maybe if you are eating at lunch some french fries and you just have this salt and just sprinkle it all over and say, you know what? Or some other way that you would kind of decide to do it. I would just challenge you to just open this up and say, God, I take this. I open it up and I pour out my life to you. I want to be the salt of the earth for the people around me. I don't want to be the roadblock, the hindrance from people coming to you and experiencing your grace and your extravagant love. God, I pour out my life to you. Let's close our eyes and pray for a moment. Father, as we kind of pause for a moment, help us to understand that these weren't just these words that we're speaking of, where Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth, that this isn't just some history lesson, that we would truly believe that the words that were spoken thousands of years ago ring the same and are true today as they were back then. And so God, right now, open up our hearts as followers of Jesus, or maybe someone's in here and they're not a follower of Christ. My hope is that they take that next step in understanding your goodness and your grace. But those that are followers of Jesus this morning, God, if they're comfortable in their Christianity and they're comfortable in, you know, just sitting at church and going home and just living in a spiritual kind of bubble, God, I think you make them uncomfortable. God, help them to see that they're supposed to live beyond themselves. God, help them to see that they are to be aware, they are to be authentic, they are to be available to the people and to the world around them that are far from God. And so once again, we just pause for a moment and thank you for this. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your love. In Jesus' name. And everyone said, amen.
This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.